Welcome to another edition of Tuscaloosa Talks. Today we're in the Harrison Taylor Incident Command Center. We're actually about two floors below the first level of City Hall. So literally we're under the street here in the city of Tuscaloosa. This is where we gather when we have major events that require us to activate our incident command system. In other words, this is the hub center that centralizes our communication when we have to respond to whether it's an act of Mother Nature or whether it's something even worse as an act of man. One of the things we're really proud of here at the city of Tuscaloosa is that for a city our size, our response to an emergency is best in class. And so I'm certainly proud of our team. I'm proud that our council has invested into the resources and technology to make that available. Today I'm joined by two individuals who play a key role in our emergency management here at the city above what they do on a normal day. I'm joined by Chief Randy Smith, who is Chief of Tuscaloosa Fire and Rescue, and Jared Milligan, who's our newly appointed Executive Director of Infrastructure and Public Services. Good morning, guys.
Good morning, sir.
Glad to have you down here with us. I know that both of you have been really excited about getting onto the podcast. You just love being part of things like this. I'm being facetious, obviously. They're really great at their jobs, and they shy away from things like this. But I think it's important to the people who pay our salaries that they get to know a little bit about the people who are responsible for their safety and security, especially at those critical moments. So, Chief, I'm going to start with you. Give us a little bit about your professional background in fire and rescue, and also FEMA as well, because you've spent a lot of time in your career working with FEMA.
Yes, sir. I spent for the last 35 years now, I've been involved in the fire service for almost 39 and a half years. I've been involved in emergency medical services. Started that when I was 16. You know, as far as my background with the federal government, I've worked for public health, DHS, FEMA, and also the Health Department of Health and Human Services. It's where I formally, I guess, retired from after 24 years. I was a team commander of a federal disaster medical team, also worked in the Secretary's Operational Support Center out of D.C., which is similar to the EOC we have here set up, but also I worked in the field at large incidents. Some of the incidents I don't know if it's fortunate to be involved in, or, you know, it gave me a lot of experience, anything from Katrina, pretty much any hurricane that's hit the continental United States in the last 24 years, I got to have some part of involvement in. I was the initial operations officer for public health during 9/11 at Ground Zero. I supervised five medical clinics that were there for not only the victims as they were recovered or for any of the responders. Later, about a month later, I came back and worked in the safety and security in the incident management team, which was in the IC in downtown Manhattan.
Well, recently I was down in Nokomis and I was catching WKRG and they were showing a 20-year review, and I caught a glimpse of you because I believe Mobile Fire and Rescue, where you worked at the time, was one of the first units up there providing support services for, to those victims of 9/11.
Yes, sir. We went up as there was six of us that were a part of the federal disaster medical team. We were the team was based out of Fort Walton Beach, Florida. You know, when the second tower got hit, you know, a little bit after the second tower collapsed, you know, I got a phone call and said, you know, pack, we're going to Manhattan at some point. And, yeah. You know, it was a few days later, they were finally able to get us into the city.
Well, Jared, you were recently appointed to Infrastructure and Public Services, but while you were acting, you had to deal with some issues. But before we go into that, tell the people at home a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, so I worked with the city since 2007. I've been able to serve in many different roles, anywhere from the engineering department, several different operational roles in water and sewer, logistics, facility maintenance. So been privileged to be able to participate in a lot of different departments since I've been here.
So did you know you'd be a sewer man?
I didn't. And I mean,
how does that happen? I mean, all seriousness.
Wastewater engineer was my first position at the city, so I guess that's kind of how it got started, and that's where I have the most experience at the city is in the sewer department.
I remember when Joe Robinson was recommending you, he was very high on you and said you would do an outstanding job, and Joe nailed it. Well, we get internally, we kind of pick on Jared a little bit. As you can tell, he's very outgoing and gregarious, as you're seeing here. Now, Jared, when you were acting director, we had, I think it was Tropical Storm Claudette come and sit on top of our city. And one of the things that really struck me was the fantastic job that you did managing the chaos of that moment of us, you know, essentially having a water system that became vulnerable. Describe to people briefly what we were facing that Sunday morning.
Yeah, that particular day we started... We couldn't maintain our water pressure in certain areas of our system, and quite frankly, we knew we probably had a leak somewhere, but we couldn't find it due to the river being out of the banks. That we were having a very hard time accessing areas that we felt like where the leak was to be able to find it. So it took us a while, but you know, we had have a really good team, and we were out there all throughout the night, and that morning, I think we found it sometime that afternoon. But it ended up being three leaks that day. So it was really, we used the drone that helped us on one with the fire and rescue. And then also just the others were actually a sewer leak and a water leak where the floods had kind of blown out the lines. Nothing you can really do to protect with a storm event like that, the infrastructure. So luckily we were able to find it before we ran out of water anywhere.
Well, while we're talking about flooding, let's talk about what we have faced this summer. Mm-hmm. I personally don't remember anything like this, at least in my 16-year career with the city of Tuscaloosa. When the public hears terms like 100-year flood or 500-year flood or 1,000-year flood, what does that mean in layman's terms?
So, yeah, it doesn't, it's kind of misnamed. It doesn't mean that you're only going to have that flood one time every 100 years. I think it's, you have a 0.1% chance of having a rainfall event of that intensity in that year. So, for a 100-year flood event.
Now, can you build, I guess you can do anything.
Yeah.
But is it practical to build to a 500-year or 1,000-year?
It's probably not financially practical to design and build to handle a 500 or a 1,000-year flood event like we had recently. Of course, you can design to build anything, but it just costs a lot of money and it wouldn't be financially practical. Typically, what our system's designed for is a 25-year flood event. And then in some areas, they are designed for a 100-year flood, but that's usually the max.
Now, if you're a constituent and you're listening to this and you already have flooding issues, what would you recommend that they do?
Well, call 311 and report those issues so we know about it. Oftentimes, we don't get a good account for each time that it floods because they're not always getting reported. So that's number one. And also, I just, you know, stay out of the floodwaters. I mean, definitely don't get in the floodwaters.
Well, and I know I sent you an email earlier this week, but from a constituent. But if you see trees down or debris that's in a storm drainage area, it's important that they call because that can back up water, right?
That's right. They need to call us, and we'll come out there and get them unstopped.
Yeah, and I know that over the last few dry days, we've been able to get a lot of good work done.
We have, and we always go out before rain events when we know they're coming and go to any problem areas that we know collect debris more than others and do preventative maintenance on those areas and clean them out.
Chief, when you were, I know you when you've gone through all your different experiences, whether it's been natural disasters or in 9/11's case, terrorist attack, did you ever think you'd be dealing with a pandemic?
No, sir.
Yeah.
No, that was one thing. I mean, we've trained for it on and off for the last 25 years with ADPH and lots of classes that we've done, of implementing pod systems and trying to do mass testing, mass inoculations. But, it was one of those things I wasn't expecting.
Well, I mean, when I came down here, you gave me my situational report, my daily situational report that I've been getting now for, I guess, well over 18 months, and you've been leading the city's efforts when it comes to COVID-19. I know it's impossible to describe in a minute or less, but try to give a description of what you have to do on top of your daily duties as fire chief to organize the city's efforts as it relates to COVID-19?
Well, it's going to have some ebbs and flows. Some of them lasted for many, many months when we were at the height. You know, initially in the very beginning, when we started looking at this in December, and then in January, you know, I know we had our first discussions on it. And in February, when you told me I was going to be the fortunate one to be in charge.
You shouldn't have come to me in January and said we need to be preemptively buying supplies and begin getting geared up for it. But
lesson learned.
Yeah.
But, you know, the things that we've been dealing with over that time, you know, I really think the city of Tuscaloosa was the tip of the spear for the state. You know, we were on top of everything. We went from having a small, compact group to at one point we had probably 35 people working directly within command, and not to mention the ones that are working in the departments. You know, we established real early on a good, solid command structure following NIMS, incident management. But, you know, the one thing that to me that has helped, you know, is that we've been trying to, our number one focus has been protecting the community, protecting DCH, and maintaining a solid workforce, you know, being able to provide the services. So early on, we created a division in incident command that really has never really been utilized. It's HR section. Mm-hmm. And they were tasked with tracking all of our exposures, everyone that became ill or symptomatic, you know, and that really, you know, and that's one of the biggest part of the I guess, the taskings that I put onto them was, you know, yes, we're looking at what DCH numbers are. We had signed MOUs with them to receive information. We were constantly reviewing the state information. We were looking at all different doctor's offices, the doc in the boxes, so to speak, Watley and other places like that, the jail, and getting data to try to just track how this was overall going to affect our community.
It's hard to describe to people. You go through, of course, the initial phase of no one really knows what we're dealing with because the science was so new to this problem. Then it was about testing, and then it kind of, everybody said it'd go away during the summer. Then in the summer it spikes, and then the students come back. I mean, it was just one challenge after another, and I tell people all the time that, you know, emotionally, the tornado was much harder, especially in those 2 to 3 week period. But once you got through that 3 or 4 week period, you could look at other models of how you rebuild. And there was science, there was institutional history on rebuilding, at least in other cities. With this pandemic, there is no institutional history. There was no playbook for us to lean on, which I think was a huge challenge for all of us.
Yes, sir, it was. And like you were saying, with something like the tornado and everything, it's a focused area of the city. Normal operations occurring in the other parts of the city. So you have both operations going on. This affected every place, yeah, you know.
And everything we do.
Exactly. And, you know, from, you know, the supplies that we have to purchase, the medical equipment that we have to purchase to be able to respond to calls, masks, gowns, gloves, you know, prices skyrocketed because of the demand, you know. So, I mean, it was one of those very interesting experiences.
Well, you and your team have done a fantastic job. And this
Thanks,
community,
sir.
Not just the city of Tuscaloosa, this entire county was fortunate to have your leadership. As we wrap up, let's talk about, we're getting into severe weather season. I will never forget being at Hillcrest High School when my stepson Trey was playing basketball and the tornado of December, I think it was 16th, came through. And it not only destroyed my car, but it certainly, you know, really for the first time in my life, awakened me to the dangers of tornadoes. We're entering that season. So Jared, just from an infrastructure and public services standpoint, what would you recommend to people out there that as we enter this severe weather season to be thinking about?
I think, first of all, just have a plan, you know, what you're going to do during severe weather, where you're going to go in the house, make sure it's communicated to your family, and stay weather aware, have a weather radio. And definitely we'll be putting out any information, you know, where the shelters are, when they'll be open, and things like that.
And one thing we won't do that we did on April 27th, and it was a lesson learned, we will not have all of our assets in one place.
No, we won't. From our side, we spread it out all over the city. So
You know, those are lessons learned and something we certainly share with the community. Chief, from your standpoint, what should the public keep in mind as we enter severe weather season?
Well, I mean, biggest thing is what Jared just said, you know, be prepared, have a plan. You know, we teach in fire safety to have an exit plan. If your house is on fire, have a rally point. Same thing for a storm. You know, you need to be prepared, have, you know, 72 hours worth of supplies, water, food, medication, clothes, diapers, you know, any of the essential things you need. But then also have a rally point if something was to happen, you know, if the tornado came through, if you had a structural collapse or flooding, you know, where are you going to go? Have a plan and don't just wait until the last minute to try to make it up on the spot.
And I'm going to add to y'all's great points. In your safe place, make sure there's a couple of helmets, blankets, shoes that you walk out of. You know, again, and being prepared is the best. And when we do emergency management training, my number one priority is preparation. And with today's, you know, weather forecasting, we know 48, 72 hours out what's going to be in front of us, and at least the idea of what could be in front of us. And so please get prepared. The city does a really good job with its social media alerts. If you want to learn more about what we do in severe weather, go to Tuscaloosa.com. On behalf of the people of Tuscaloosa, I want to thank you for what you do every day. I wish people could see just how really good you guys are and the team members that work under you. Please express our thank you. And to everyone that listened in today on Tuscaloosa Talks, if you want more information regarding weather safety, certainly go to Tuscaloosa.com, or you can email me at mayor@Tuscaloosa.com. Have a great day.